when you try to...
Oh, well, some people do. But then you just some people do. Put it that way. I'm not awesome. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Coming Out Conversations. I'm Troy Fitzgerald with Secular Safe House, and I have the honor and privilege today of speaking with the grandson of Herbert W. Armstrong, Larry Gott. Like I said, he's the grandson. Herbert Armstrong founded the Worldwide Church of God, which was the church that I was raised in, and we actually also had the opportunity to interview Deborah Armstrong, Larry's cousin. Deborah was the daughter of Dwight Armstrong, Herbert's brother, younger brother. So you might check that out on another podcast we did. But I'm really honored and appreciate Larry making the effort. We've had some technology issues here. We spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out how to work through those, but we resorted to just doing a speakerphone conversation on our phones here. So the call quality is not as great as we'd like, but I feel like it's sufficient enough to go forward with the interview. So, Larry, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, I'd like to start out, as I start all these interviews, just having you, you know, I think probably a lot of people who are listening know what the Worldwide Church of God was about, but do you mind just describing some of the major teachings, what the culture of the church was when you were growing up, and what was it like growing up in the shadow of your grandfather, Herbert Armstrong?
Well, your last statement was the most interesting, because I think everybody who was related to or involved with Herbert Armstrong was pretty much in his shadow. He was a kingly sort of person in his own mind. He believed that he was in charge, and everybody pretty much agreed with him, which is why he stayed that way, I suppose. I grew up in the church. I was born into this family that was, you know, my mother was his daughter, and when my parents met, my dad, I don't think, was particularly religious, but he joined the church because of my mom.
And your mom, and just to clarify, your mom was actually Beverly, the oldest daughter, oldest sibling of the four, right?
That's right. My mother was Beverly, she didn't know any other religion. The church was really very insular. It was a small church when we first started in when it first started in Oregon. I was just a toddler, and before I was even born. But I mean, when I started with it in Oregon, I was a toddler, and we came to California, and the only people that we knew, our entire society, were people in the church. It was a pretty small group at that time, and it just began to grow. The teachings were similar in a lot of ways to most Christian churches, I suppose, except that the Worldwide Church, which was then called the Radio Church of God, believed in a Saturday Sabbath, and they believed in the Jewish holy days, like Passover and the Feast of Tabernacles, they did not keep Christmas or Easter, and considered those things abominations. They also tried to keep the Jewish dietary laws to a point. That is, they didn't believe that you had to have different dishes and so on for meat and milk. That particular restriction wasn't there, but we were not allowed to have anything with pork or shellfish of any kind. The rule was that it had to have a cloven hoof and chew the cud. So a goat would be okay, a cow would be okay, but a pig not. And as far as fish were concerned, they had to have fins and scales. So something like a shark or swordfish, which is my favorite.
Or catfish.
We're not allowed. And so, you know, there's a lot of these little little things that were different from mainstream Christianity. Also, their vision of hell was different. My grandfather believed that the idea of this everlasting torture in hell was wrong, and that it was simply the second death, as described in Revelation, that you is cast into the lake of fire and consumed, just simply consumed, and that would be the end of you. But it would be a terrible death by fire, but it would be brief and it would be over, and that would be it. That part I don't mind so much as far as hell goes, because if you have to have a hell, okay, let's let that be it. But in my own studies later on, I discovered plenty of places in the Bible that seem to suggest that there's something a lot more fearful than that. So that's a conversation I wanted to have with my uncle, Dr. Ted, but we never got around to it. He died before we got the chance to talk it over.
So was your mom actively, I mean, was she really a believer when you were in your preteens growing up? You know, I know you guys left when you were 14, and we'll get into that, but was she convinced that the church was the one and only true church, and did she believe by the time you guys left when you were 14 that did she think that your grandfather was God's apostle at that point?
She ever thought of him as God's apostle, but she was definitely a believer, a Christian. She believed in most of the things that most of the doctrines of the church. And by the way, I was 13, I think, when we left the church.
Okay.
That's not really terribly important. The family were all involved, because, like I said, the church was our whole society. This is everybody we knew. So the Sabbath was very important in my growing up years. From Friday at sunset until Saturday at sunset, no television. I was not able to be in the Boy Scouts or on Little League Baseball or any of those things because they all took place on the Sabbath. That limited things. I was going to public school, but I wasn't really able to participate with the other boys because of that. So that was something that kind of stunted my childhood, and to my own mind anyway. My younger sisters were both able to do those things, because by that time we were out of the church, and so they had those opportunities that I didn't.
So you were the oldest of how many? Were you the oldest?
I'm the oldest of four. I have a sister who's 15 months behind me, and then my brother Jim, my sister Sherry, is 15 months younger, and then my brother Jim is 7 years younger, and Ted is about 9 years, almost 10 years younger than I am.
Okay.
So by the time we were split with the church, they were all born, Ted and Jim, but they were still young enough to participate in all those things. I was a believer. When I was a child, I had been so indoctrinated, I'd been so consumed with all of that. Going to church every Sabbath and listening to sermons by my grandfather that could last up to 4 hours. I mean, he could hold forth for a long time.
Yeah.
And really powerful speakers with a voice that could actually almost move the front row back, just from the force of his voice. You really absorb a great deal. You imbibe a lot in services like that. So I was pretty much a believer. When I was a kid, my grandpa used to say, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" I'd say, "I want to be a preacher like my grandpa."
Really?
He loved that. He absolutely loved that. But people in my neighborhood didn't love it, because when Christmas rolled around, I was a jealous little boy of all these kids in the neighborhood getting all these presents. And I wasn't, because we didn't deserve Christmas. I saw told the other neighborhood kid that their Christmas trees were an abomination in the sight of God.
Yeah.
I did that, maybe 9 or 10. But the neighborhood mothers did not appreciate that. And a lot of the kids were invited not to play with Larry.
Yeah, I was sort of the same way when I was a kid. I was kind of proud of my unique religious beliefs and liked to tell my classmates about it. That didn't help me out too much socially, so I can relate to that. Were you close to Herbert, your grandfather? Did you guys live in the same city there in Pasadena while you were growing up?
We lived in San Gabriel, which was a suburb, you might say, of Pasadena. It was connected, very close to Pasadena, not that close. We did spend time with my grandparents in about 1949 or so. They were the first ones in the family to have a television set. So we used to go over to their house to watch TV.
Okay.
I don't think anybody ever got really close to Herbert Armstrong. Grandpa was not the kind of guy whose lap you would climb up into, even when you're a little kid. You know, he was just, he was aloof. He was the leader, he didn't say he was an apostle, but he regarded himself as a superior being, I'm certain.
Yeah, he demanded respect.
He was aloof, not to get posted.
Right. So tell us what happened when you were, I guess you were 3 years old, when you got ill, and tell us what happened. What did Herbert demand?
I don't have an actual memory of all of this, but my mother told me about it. And when I was about 3 years old, I had a fever. She said it didn't go below like 101 for several weeks. And they didn't know what it was, but they didn't take me to the doctor because they didn't believe in doctors. They thought that prayer and laying on hands and I felt olive oil on my forehead more than, you know, many times. But the fever didn't go away. And my grandfather had read a book by this guy named Dr. McCoy called The Fast Way to Health. You can still get it, by the way, on Amazon. It's still available. I believe that fasting was the way to handle any and all diseases, whatever they were. So they put me on a fast. I was to have only water until the fever broke, and I got well. I held out for 12 days.
Wow.
Mind you, I'm a 3-year-old kid getting no food for 12 days. And my mother was just beside herself, but my parents were living in my grandfather's house at the time, and he was just, you know, he would thunder at her, "If you beat it, you're going to kill him, or God is going to take him from you," you know, that kind of thing. Hey, well, he could really, you know, he could terrify people.
Right.
And he did. Well, you know, Mom had lived with that all her life. So they withheld food until Grandpa realized that I had a protruding belly and sunken eyes and looked like one of these pictures you've seen of children starving in Africa. And he finally became scared and decided to relent and let him feed me. And I didn't grow for a whole year after that, according to my mom. And I never achieved the height of my brothers or my dad. I got a maximum of 5'5", which is now, I've lost an inch of that due to normal settling.
Right.
But,
let me ask you, why do you feel Herbert had so much control over his daughter and son-in-law? Here you are going through the sickness. Why did they feel so beholden to him when they're your parents? What was the dynamic of that relationship?
Well, I think they believed in his primacy as a minister of God, and they accepted what he said, even though they didn't want to. And of course, he would thunder, as I said, at Mom if she wanted to feed me and threaten her. And she believed it. She believed in his authority. And authority is actually the word, I guess, that pretty much describes the way his relationship with everyone.
Right.
Margaret was a person of authority. He had authority over everybody in his family. He had authority over his brother Dwight. Mary, his sister, Dwight's twin, was not affected because she got married and went with her husband, and pretty much and she remained a Quaker. I don't know if you knew that Herbert grew up in a Quaker household.
Right, right.
And his sister Mary was a Quaker until the day she died.
Okay.
Another cousin of mine, Richard, Mary and Don Edmondson's son, is a Quaker. I don't think they call him ministers, but he would lead the Quaker meetings. And so, you know, a serious Quaker. But
so he had authority over the whole family. So tell us what led up to the departure when you were 13. What were the factors that caused you all to leave the church?
Well, you mentioned makeup, and that was one of the factors, because my grandfather had always told my mother that she was unattractive. He told her that when she was like a 12-year-old girl, said you are homely and that no man will ever be interested in you until he gets to know you and so on. Here's a girl who's just entering puberty and in need of approval. And here's her father saying, I'm a man and I know these things and you are homely and no one is ever going to care. And so to her, makeup was something important. And my grandmother didn't approve of it. So, although Mom used it and it was accepted pretty much for quite a while, but in the 1950s, Mom was using it and going to church, and some church members apparently remembering about Jezebel and things like that had complained that Herbert Armstrong's daughter was wearing lipstick and other makeup. Mom didn't ladle it on like Tammy Faye Baker. She was in fact very subtle about it. But even so, the ladies of the church, some of them didn't approve. So they went to my grandmother, and my grandmother went to my grandfather and said, you know, they really shouldn't be wearing makeup at church. And so Grandpa ordered her to stop doing it. And it was so important to her that her appearance be at least something that was acceptable to her.
Did he only order her, or is that when he made the change in the church about makeup as well?
That's when he changed church doctrine to include church law, there hadn't been anything before that. It had been kind of a loose confederation, but they began to start taking orders in that way when he decided that he was gonna make her bend to his will.
Okay.
And this is part of the thing about Herbert Armstrong is that his will was more important than anything.
Well, his will was God's will, right?
Well, of course. And so, you know, he ordered her not to wear makeup. So she decided for a while that she would try to just go to church with no makeup. She felt horrible about herself because she felt mousy she was not unattractive, but that's just what he had convinced her of from the time she was just a girl. That was one issue, but they were working that out. But then along comes Imperial Schools.
Just for the audience, Imperial School was the church's primary school, grades K through 12 for just church members, correct?
And they ultimately made it to high school too.
Right. Yeah. Through 12th grade.
As soon as that was an announced, they also announced who was going to be the principal, and they also announced that the children would be subject to corporal punishment at the school. And my parents were not about to let William Torrance, who was the guy who was going to be doing that, with their children. He had bragged about how he could whip children with a piece of hose and not leave any welts. And Dad said, you know, no, you're not. And so they decided to keep us in public school. And that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And so Grandpa, my mother had been singing for the church. She was a soprano, and she sang sacred songs. Classical music usually went with biblical attitude. We had been singing on the radio for some time, and had just begun singing for the television broadcast. And Grandpa fired her retroactively, as he put it, and stopped paying, which, you know, the family had been used to having this extra income. And it really hurt to do that, but that's how it was.
So she got paid to sing for the church.
I'm sorry?
She was paid to sing for the church.
Yes. In order to sing on radio and television, she had to join AFTRA. That's the American Federation of Radio and Television Artists. And so there was a union minimum wage that they had to receive. And so she got that for singing on television. It was more for on television than it was on radio. And that had been halted. And she says, well, I've already recorded these things. And he said, well, I'm only going to pay for them as we use them. And he claimed that they had stopped using them. But Mom was still getting fan mail from people who were saying, well, they loved her voice and her singing on the radio and television broadcasts. So she knew he had used them.
Right.
And she was asking to pay her for them. He went to the church and denounced her in front of the congregation and said that she had threatened to sue him, which was a lie. She never did any such thing. She never threatened to take him to the union, although he knew she could. And he was frightened by that, I think. If she had gone to the union, they could have forced him to pay her and or shut down his shop.
Wow.
They had to do that. So, that really bothered him, and anyway, when we were out, we were disfellowshipped at that point. The whole family was out. As far as the makeup thing was concerned, I heard him call my mother and a harlot. He said, go with the sluts and the harlots, is what he said to her, and I was in another room, but heard that because, well, you didn't have to be standing next to Grandpa to hear him. He had a booming voice, and there was no, you didn't have to use an air trumpet to figure out what he was saying.
So let me see if I got this straight. The makeup thing had happened, and so things were kind of rocky because of that, but then she decided not to send you to Imperial Schools, and he decides, because of her defiance with that, he accused her of threatening to sue the church because of the retroactive firing of her. He fired her. And then did he justify firing her? I'm sorry, disfellowshipping her and your father because of a lie about a threat of a lawsuit? Or was it because she was defiant about sending you to Imperial Schools?
I think it was all of the above. She was defiant, and he was not going to stand for that, and so we were ousted. And that's when he went to the ministers, and that's when church government was first instituted. There hadn't been anything before that, but that's when they did that, and he used, you know, whatever was found with you on earth is found in heaven. So he started, saying, it's government from the top down. You listen to me. I take my orders from God. And if I'm wrong, I'm the one to blame. That's how he told it to the church.
Okay. Wow. So where did your family go after you departed the church? Or what church did you start attending? A different church right away, or and what church was that?
We joined for a while a local Presbyterian church. I don't know how much different that is. It's just the idea of being in church. I mean, they still wanted to worship. They still wanted to be Christians in their own minds. And so, and I was just a kid. I went with them to the church, and I joined the choir and all that stuff. So we didn't stay long in that church.
So they must have not believed at that point that it was the one and only true church, because I know as my father as a pastor, you know, I mean, when people would be threatened of being kicked out of the church or departed, you know, you were essentially losing your eternal life because you were leaving God's family and the one true church. I assume your parents really didn't believe that, or did they just decide at that point that they no longer believe that?
That's kind of hard to say. I couldn't get inside their head, but I can tell you that they still believed in Jesus. They believed in Christianity. But they needed some kind of church background and group. And so I guess they thought that that's probably why they didn't stay, because they couldn't adjust that quickly to be completely separate. But they didn't really feel at home at the Presbyterian church either. And there wasn't any other group around that was anywhere similar to Ambassador, I mean, all to the World Life Church. That was a very insular group.
Right.
One of the results of being disfellowshipped was that we didn't know anyone. Our entire society were people at the church.
Right.
And there was one lady who had babysat with us kids. Her name was Mrs. Moyer. And she was kind of grandmotherly. And we called her grandma. We kids called her grandma. And she was a very close friend of the family. I mean, a close friend. When all this happened, she gave my mother a call. She said, "I'm sorry, Beverly, but we can't fellowship you anymore." And click, and that was the end of it. They turned their backs on us entirely. Nobody would even speak to us.
Wow.
Dad had a situation because he was working for the college as the printer. He was in charge of the print shop, and he kept his job. And so he dealt with him in that basis only. But as far as any society was concerned, no. We were cut off, except for his really close friend and partner in the print shop, Herman Olson, was a very dear friend and was until he died. I don't think their relationship changed at all.
So your father continued working for the church in the printing department, even though you guys were disfellowshipped.
Yeah, thank goodness for that, because he would have been, we would have had a difficult time of it if both parents had lost their jobs and probably had been supported.
Right.
But it really straightened our circumstances, because mom's salary had been larger than dad's, and we had all of us become accustomed to that, and there it went away.
Right.
That was a difficulty, but we got through it okay.
Did you feel the impact of that at that age? Were you aware of the trauma that was causing your parents at that early age, or did you not realize it until you got older and you heard the stories?
I was aware of the emotional trauma to my mother, because she was a very sensitive person, and she suffered a great deal from the. What's the word I want? The unrest in the family, and it really bothered her not being as we had been with the family and the church.
Right.
And it was really difficult for her, and consequently for us. We absorbed a lot of that, because she cried and she was upset a lot. And I think she and if I have a feeling that that she was, you know, out of God's help. When we kids got sick after we were disfellowshipped, you know, we had measles or something like that, and she wanted someone to come over and pray for us. Found the church, and her brothers wouldn't come. The only person over there, and I don't know whether you know him, you probably do, who was willing to come and lay hands on us kids was Herman Hay.
Oh, really? Okay. Herman Hay, yeah.
Dr. Hay, I don't think he was doctor at the time. He was a young minister. And he had the compassion to do that in spite of orders to the contrary. He just came because he was asked to. And I respect him for that. I always, always have a special place in my heart for that man because he was willing to do that in spite of the danger to his own prospects, you know.
That's interesting. That's interesting. So you guys attended a set of church for a little while, but you said that didn't last very long. What happened through the years as you were, you know, growing up as a teenager? Did your family just stop going to church altogether?
Yeah, we pretty much did. I was bitter about what was going on with my mom, and I started reading the Bible for myself, and I began to see, this is the beginning of my journey to whatever it is I am now. You know, these labels we have, agnostic, atheist, etc. I have people telling me what I am.
Right.
That happens a lot. I'm sure you've had the same experience. People are trying to define you. Well, I was trying to define myself over a long, long period of time. But I started reading the Bible myself, and I got as far as Job, and I realized that this God can't be the God of love that 1 John 4:16 says he is. It says he is love. Not just that he has love or he's loving, but that God is love. That's what it says. And I could see clearly that that wasn't so. Job is a man who had done everything right, and God is even bragging about him to Lucifer. And Lucifer, Satan. Satan says, "We'll take away all the good stuff that you've given him, and he'll curse you." And God, who is supposed to be omniscient, already knew the outcome of that, and yet he allowed his best servant to be almost destroyed, as he says himself in Job. You've read it, no doubt. Without cause, said I've undertaken to destroy him without cause. That's not an exact quote, but those words without cause are an exact quote from at least the King James Version.
Right.
And I hesitated at that point. I said, this isn't right. This is not a loving God. There's something terribly wrong here. And so I began looking into it. And by the time I was in high school, I was reading Ingersoll. And by the time I was in junior college, I was reading Bertrand Russell, you know, Why I Am Not a Christian. And from there on, I became sort of an agnostic, although if you had asked me when I was 20, I probably would have said, yeah, I still think I'm a Christian.
Okay.
And if you'd asked me at 40, I probably would have said, I think there must be something. I don't believe in necessarily Yahweh, but there must be something. It's been a long road going farther and farther from the idea of Godhead. And it only left me entirely. And by the time I got on YouTube about 8 years ago, started doing videos, I realized that I was an atheist.
Right.
And started calling myself an atheist. I said, there's no point in, you know, I've always been a little hesitant about that word because it has a kind of to people who think that they believe, if atheist,
right,
is a horrible person.
Right.
I didn't want to use that, but then I realized that is what I am. An atheist is not a person who believes there is no God. There is a person who has no belief that there is one. That's all.
Right.
That's all it really means.
Right.
My definition is why I'm an atheist.
Well, it's interesting.
Some people look at atheist. I don't think I'm weak, but a strong atheist is someone who asserts that there's no God. And I can't make that assertion because I can't prove that any more than I can disprove God.
Right, you can't prove a negative. So it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned it. It was not too far back that you were began to identify as an atheist. But let's go back in time a little bit to in your story, because in your late 20s, you actually went back to, or you went to, you didn't return to the church, Worldwide Church of God, but you went to Ambassador College when you were 29, is that right? What led up to that, and where was your views about theology at that point? Because I know you weren't considered a member of the church, even though you were attending.
I went to Ambassador College because I could get in. I had really fooled around in junior college for at least 3 years and never took an associate degree, and I was a very indolent student. I had great grades in journalism, which is what I was interested in, but nothing much else. Not because I wasn't capable, but because I wasn't interested. And then I realized that I was limiting my choices and ability to make a living. And I thought, okay, I'll get my college degree, but with the grades I've got, I can't get into an accredited college. And so I went and talked to my grandfather and said, I want to go to Ambassador College. He had tears in his eyes when he heard that. And he said that he would pay for my college tuition and books. For my being at Ambassador College.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, it's just, it's a lack of character on my part, I'm afraid. I always follow the line of least resistance, and this is where I've come to.
So you were, this was in 71 that you went to Ambassador when you were 29?
71, so I was going on 29.
Okay.
I was like 28 years old, and I didn't have any other prospects, and I thought, I'll go to Ambassador College, get my degree from Ambassador College, and then go to Cal State Northridge, which would accept the Ambassador degree for getting into their master's program.
Right. And you went,
have an accredited degree. That was the plan anyway. It didn't work out that way.
Right. And you went for a couple of years right into 73. How did your mom's relationship, because I understand that Beverly, your mom, went back to the employ of the church, working as Herbert's social secretary of sorts, right? Was that before or after you went to Ambassador?
It was before, slightly before. It had been a long time that my mother had been estranged from her father, and she was working as a receptionist at a mortuary, Turner and Stevens in Pasadena, and so she had a job. She was doing okay, but Grandpa started putting out feelers to try to get back in touch. And he kind of assigned a couple of people from the church to her to kind of woo her. They made friends with her, and they took her to, his name was Enrique Ruiz. He was a minister, and he was in Mexico City. And his wife, Holly, was an American. And they became very good friends with my mother, and they took her to Mexico on a trip and so forth, and they just kind of, and then Grandpa offered her this job, and she really thought about it seriously for a while first, because it meant leaving the job that she had. She already had a secure job, but he offered her better pay and so forth, and really wanted to get back at her. She told him that she was not going to join the church, and that there were certain conditions, and he agreed to them, that he wouldn't try to foist off any religious things on her at all. And then he accepted her under those circumstances. So she began traveling with him. So it was at that point when, I'm not even sure, she might even have suggested by going to AC. But in any case, I went and talked to him, and I got started in 1971, I think it was, 71.
And was it because of your mom working with him as his social secretary, I don't know if that's the right title, but that you got to travel on the jet in his world travels? That was before Ambassador or during Ambassador?
That was during. That was after he had already had my sister go on one trip around the world with him, and then the next year I went on a trip around the world in the G2. That was pretty fantastic.
Wow. Was it just that one trip, or did you go on multiple trips?
No, this was just getting some travel experience.
Gotcha.
And it was a good thing to do. Mom was traveled frequently, and she was all over the place. She'd been over the world.
Okay.
Including even behind the Iron Curtain, they went to Romania on one trip.
Yeah. So what was it like attending Ambassador, getting to like go on that world trip? Here you are, Herbert Armstrong's grandson. You're not a member of the church. You didn't attend services, and your mom didn't. What was the relationship with your fellow students at Ambassador, being the son of Herbert, or the grandson of Herbert?
I got along really well. My fellow students at Ambassador. My journalism experience came in very handy because I worked on the portfolio, the college newspaper, and I also was a reader and researcher for the Plain Truth magazine. That was a job that I had on campus that gave me some small income. And I got along really well with everyone, but I think a few of the students had been sort of assigned to work on me. Some of them, to bring Larry around.
Right.
They just loved me almost to death. I also struck up some friendships that I still have with people from there who were and are still great friends. I was kind of a campus heretic. Everybody knew I wasn't a believer. And so when I joined the chorale, I was a singer.
And
I was in the chorale, and we would, the chorale was, of course, expected to perform at church services. So I would go to the services and hear the sermonette, the beginning of the service, and the chorale would sing. And then when they filed back to their seats, I would keep right on going out the door. Everybody used to seeing that, so nobody really much said anything about it. I had Sabbath pretty much to myself. I could go to a movie or go and see my mom or do whatever I wanted to, and leave the campus.
Right.
In those days. I was even a smoker in those days.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Pretty rebellious. So, here at this point, I'm sure the church was teaching that it was, I mean, as it was before, I'm sure, too, when you were younger, but the one and only true church. And did you just believe all that was nonsense? And had you already kind of, because you said still in your 20s you still believed in Christianity at some level, but certainly believed in God. How did you reconcile your views about theology with what the church taught? Did you just think it was all nonsense, or what?
That's a good question. I had a lot of anxiety at the time because I had all these questions and had for years, and then suddenly I'm surrounded with all this certainty, and it created a great deal of anxiety in me, and I was going through a period of anxiety, depression that was really serious at the time. Struggling inside myself about it because, again, here's all these people that I'm surrounded by every day, and they are utterly certain of what they believe, and I had had misgivings for a long, long time, and those two things struggling against each other in my head were pretty difficult. I had some entries in my journal at the time that I was very confused and upset most of the time because of that. But I still kept away from the religious part as much as I could, except that as a student in Ambassador College, I was required to take Bible classes. So I had to learn the theology as they taught it, whether I actually believed it or not, and when it came to tests and so on, I gave them the answers they wanted.
Right.
But, as I say, it's difficult to try to walk a tightrope like that and to be in two places at the same time.
I can only imagine. And you're constantly getting pressure from fellow students to really look deeper, and I'm sure that was very difficult.
The ones that got me through it, the ones who are the ones that were my closest friends there, and they were, one of them called herself and others awares. They were aware that things were not exactly as they ought to be, and they were sort of on the fence, the ones that I gravitated to and they to me, because we all realized that there was a lot of BS going on there. And
So
even though most of them, I assume, are still Christians, they are not, they're certainly not Worldwide Church anymore, and they all left.
Right.
As far as I know, or most of them did.
So were you...
There were two young women there who were identical twins. I dated both of them, that is in the Ambassador sense. You know what I'm talking about.
Right.
I really was very, I was in love with one of them, but I couldn't do anything much about it. And ultimately, she married somebody else, and I was at her wedding, and happy for her, because she was happy. We're still friends. We've been friends for 40 years now.
Interesting. So
there were others like that. There was one young woman there whose name was Betty Lau. She was Chinese-American. She called herself an ABC. That's an American-born Chinese. But she had already a degree in English and a degree in Chinese from an accredited college. But she had gotten an interest, I guess, from listening to the radio broadcast in the Worldwide Church, and so she came to Ambassador College. Well, we dated in that same Ambassador said there was nothing romantic between us, but we were great friends. But you should have seen the jaws drop when I went to Mayfair to pick her up. You know, and here's Herbert Armstrong's grandson asking for this young Chinese woman.
Right.
And everybody's wrong. What?
Yeah, interracial dating and marriage was not allowed in the church.
It was not. Interracial was considered taboo, anathema, whatever they used that term. That's a Catholic term.
Yeah.
You know how Herbert W. felt about the Catholic Church.
Right. So tell me, let me ask you this. You know, you were attending there from around 71 to, I think you said, through 73. And in 1974, I know that the church had what it called, it became known as the Big Rebellion. And this is when there was first controversy between Ted, your uncle, right? What was your relationship with Ted, and how privy or aware were you of what was going on with the politics in the church at the very top through your mom? Did you become more aware of that because of your mom's employ in the church, and what did you know about all that?
Not very directly from with Ted. Carter Ted was their family and ours had been separated, you know, back in the 50s and so by the 70s, there was this a kind of detente, I guess you could say, and Ted was friendly, but that was about it. If I met him someplace in a group of people, he would turn to me and give me the glad hand like a politician, and then immediately turn away and continue talking to whoever it was. It was like that. We didn't have a close relationship at all.
Okay.
I liked him okay. As far as I know, he liked me. We were fine. And occasionally, Ted would take my mother and me out to dinner with Shirley and the others, you know, with her sister and brother-in-law, David Antion. Molly was Shirley's sister. I don't know if you knew them or not.
Knew of them, yes.
Did you know David Antion?
I knew of him. I think it was his younger brother that I actually knew more, but I was pretty young. But I was aware of all, you know, the Antion family for sure.
Well, we were fine, you know, we were friendly, but not what you call close, up until Ted died. But of course, we were separated by 2,000 miles too. I lived in Southern California, and Ted and his family lived in Texas.
Right.
We didn't really see that much of each other, you know, for over a long period of time. First, the great estrangement, and then this just you know, long distance relationship. So we never really had that close a relationship in the family after our disfellowshipment back in 1957, I think it was, or 56.
Yeah.
No, 55.
Right. So you're going to AC. Your mom's working for Herbert still during that time, right?
Yeah, she was on these world trips very often.
So when did that end, and what led to that? I know you mentioned in previous conversations with me about the contract stuff, and can you tie in what Stanley Raiders, you know, what you were aware of as far as his involvement and any dynamics there with your mom's opinion about Stanley Rader, and just what led to her ultimate departure?
I'm not exactly clear on that myself, but a lot of it. When my granddad asked Mom to join him on his travels, she had an apartment in Alhambra, and he arranged for a home for her in La Cañada. Just down the street from Dorothy, you would say, in La Cañada, California. It was owned by the church, but Stanley Rader worked out a contract whereby Mom had what is called a life interest in that house. And she paid rent to the college for it, but it was a very nominal rent. And she lived there almost expected to live there the rest of her life. As it turned out, she did. She died prematurely in 1992 of cancer.
Okay.
Immediately, the house reverted to the church. And it wasn't very long before one of their ministers moved in.
Okay.
But she had a life interest in that and a contract that gave her a salary. And this, and the use of that house in perpetuity. And Rader was a very good, very astute lawyer. whose contract was absolutely ironclad. There wasn't any way that it was going to happen to that. The breakup came when the church was put in receivership by the state of California. The Cultural Foundation was suspected of misusing funds, and people in the church actually put up their homes as collateral against this thing with the state.
Right.
And the state wanted to, Grandpa wanted to invalidate Mom's contract and have her sign another contract with what was called the Corporation Soul. That's S-O-L-E, not S-O-U-L.
Mm-hmm.
Mom went to an attorney to look over her contract, and this attorney told her her contract was absolutely binding and there was no reason for her to abrogate that contract. So when my grandfather called her to ask her about it, why hadn't she signed the Corporation Soul? She said she'd seen an attorney, and that the attorney assured her that the contract that she had was perfectly valid, and she didn't want to sign off of it. But she was actually afraid that if she did sign off of it, that she would lose everything, and she probably would have. They would have found a way to screw her out of it. But, and my grandfather just hit the roof. He hollered at her, he raised his voice. He was afraid, I think, and he said, "You're going to destroy the God's work." you heard that voice.
You just tripped out the whole audience.
You think I got it down?
Oh, yeah, I think you got it.
I was really upset. She recorded that conversation. I don't know if I still got a tape of it someplace, but it was something, boy.
Oh, boy. Let me know if you ever find that. I'd love to listen to that. Wow.
She stood her ground and said, "Now, Dad," she never got upset, voice never raised or anything. "Now, Dad, there's no reason to be upset about this. I'm going to keep the contract I have." And no, he was anyway. Things started blowing up after that, there was something in her contract that when she was unable physically to do it, she could stop going, or if he didn't use her on the trips. And he started going with Ramona on the trips, the woman he ultimately married.
Right.
And divorced.
His second wife after.
Divorce was no good for anybody until Herbert did it.
Yeah, my grandparents actually went through the whole divorce and remarriage thing. And then, of course, they were able to get married again because Herbert had decided to marry a divorced woman. It was always, you know, it was always fascinating that what was convenient for Herbert, you know, would cause him to change the doctrines that devastated other people's lives.
Well, and he had devastated people's lives about that. He'd asked people to leave spouses that they loved because they had married and they were living in sin, according to him, because the other of them had been married before. And they actually dissolved marriages on his account, on his say-so.
Yeah.
Horrible thing. And in fact, I think Deborah told you that happened to her mother.
Right.
She left the husband who had she'd had two children with before Deborah.
Mm-hmm.
Because the church told her to.
Yeah, it was one of the darkest.
It's a terrible thing to do to people.
I think it's one of the darkest things about the church that occurred.
Yeah, when it was convenient for him to marry a divorced woman, then it became all right. He managed to find a way to justify it. And as I understand it, there were other divorces that started to proceed from that time. Because they, you know, if the prophet did it, then they can too.
Right. So you...
So, bragged about all these wonderful marriages that were made at Ambassador College, that are made in the Worldwide Church, that they were always so happy. And he just, you know, he just practically sang that word, happy, that how wonderful these marriages were. And they were not all so wonderful.
Right.
You know, all were able to maintain a face, but the truth of it was a lot of them were not happy.
Yeah.
And they were only staying together because they were afraid of the lake of fire.
Right.
Basically is what it came down to.
Right. Oh yeah. We could do a whole show on the divorce and marriage thing. It was just quite a deal. So your mom left the employee because of that contract dispute, or if that kind of was a precursor?
Besides the thing in the contract, when he didn't need her anymore, she was still getting her salary because that was in the contract, but she didn't need to go on those trips anymore.
Okay.
So she and Ramona took over.
Right. Well, listen, I want to touch on one more subject before we wrap this up, and you know what I'm going to ask you about here. It's the question of the allegations of incest that Herbert committed incest with his youngest daughter, Dorothy. Can you share a little bit about what you were aware of, what your family was aware of, or at least the opinions? And I'll just preface this by saying, you know, I acknowledge that, you know, I don't certainly have any proof, and I don't think probably anybody but those involved have proof of it, but there's a lot of documentation. And the reason I think this is important to bring up is Herbert Armstrong presented himself as God's apostle and clearly a minister of Jesus Christ, to say the least. And I think by the qualifications that they quoted themselves in the scriptures, he was certainly not qualified. So there's a lot of hypocrisy there. But can you speak to the incest allegations and what you, when you became privy of that, however you were, you at Ambassador, or was that before, and just speak to that a little bit, if you would.
I had known about that before. It is true. It is a matter, again, I mean, obviously, I wasn't there, but it is a matter of family lore. It is something that is accepted and believed in the family. We all knew it happened.
Yeah.
Nobody spoke about it because of Dottie. We didn't want to disturb or upset her. It was none of it was her fault. She was, I think she was only 14 or 15 when it began. So she was not capable of consent in the first place. So what it was basically rape.
Right.
But it went on for quite a while. And yes, he did commit incest with his younger daughter.
Did you become aware of that through your mom, or how did you learn of that?
Well, I mean, I don't know how it came out, but I don't know how long mom knew about it. It was one of those things that was not spoken of much, but everybody knew it. You know, these things that kind of hover over a family. You know about these things, and yet you don't make it a topic of conversation.
Right.
You wanted to find out about his basic character. When it came to respect for your elders, you know, in Leviticus, it says that you have a son who won't obey his father and so forth, but you can lay a hand on him, take him to the outside of the town, and you and the elders will stone him to death. My grandfather knocked his father down, knocked him to the ground.
Really?
Talking about respect for the father. He actually hit him.
Really? When he was an adult or when he was younger?
Morris, known as Harry Armstrong. He was gone long before I was born. I never met him. I've got a photograph of him, but I don't, so I know what he looked like, but I never knew him. Just like I never knew my father's parents. They were both dead before my parents met. So there's a lot about family history that's kind of foggy. All I know about my dad's parents is what little he could relate, and he didn't go into a great much detail about them.
Yeah.
Died pretty young. My paternal grandfather was only 49, but he died, and my grandmother on that side was only 36.
Oh, wow.
She was left with six children when her husband died, and she had to take in other ladies' laundry to wash on a washboard, not a washing machine, but a washboard in order to support the kids.
Mm.
And she literally worked herself to death.
Mm.
Died at the age of 36 during the Depression.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was... family lores tends to get a little foggy, and it's
sure.
Good to know what you know the details in any great accuracy.
Well, let me ask you this, and kind of wrapping up. You know, I usually ask, you know, what would your advice be to people who are having doubts about their faith, their religious beliefs? But I'd like to kind of frame it a little differently. What would be your advice to those who perhaps are listening, who are maybe sitting on the fence, still part of one of the splinter groups of the Worldwide Church of God? There are hundreds, as I understand. And if anyone happens to be listening to this, what would you want them to know about Herbert Armstrong and the teachings of the Worldwide Church of God and that theology and anything about his character? What would you want them to know?
He was a rather tyrannical bent. He was a person who craved and used authority over other people. That was sort of the essence of him. Nobody was really close to him ever, including his wife. He was an authoritarian. I would tell people that he was not completely honest with everybody about himself, because you know, he expected people to hew to a line that he couldn't follow himself, including the divorce thing and of course the incest that did happen. I don't remember the name of the guy who first wrote that in a book about him. I'm trying to think. It was
Robinson, I think.
Robinson.
Yeah, the Tangled Web.
I think so.
Yeah.
He didn't even bother to deny it. He said, well, my people won't believe it anyway.
Right.
He was all smug about it. He was, one time when I was going to, there was an open house at Jacob Wilson Lab, and I was being taken over there by David Antion, who was Shirley Armstrong's sister's husband. And there were a couple of people who were from the church from back east, and they knew that I was Herbert Armstrong's grandson. And they just asked me, well, is Herbert Armstrong the wonderful, caring, loving, kind, gentle, Christian kind of man that he seems to be? And my answer was a single word: no.
Yeah.
And there was a long, uncomfortable silence, and then the subject was changed. And that was the end of that.
Yeah. So...
But it was embarrassing, but, you know, I just had to tell him the truth. No, he wasn't as he appeared at all.
Yeah.
And so the people are saying they're basing their beliefs and their desire to be in that church on the character of its founder, they're making a mistake.
So you would say he was a fraud. Would you say he was a sociopath?
I don't know if it was a sociopath and fraud necessarily. He was, I think he was a person who was completely narcissistic and believed only in people doing whatever his bidding was. That's how he wanted things to be.
Right.
If you want to know about things about Balfin and so forth, I have some videos on YouTube.
About what was that? I missed that. About what?
I have some videos on YouTube. I have a lot of videos on YouTube. But there's one called To a Christian on the Fence. and more from a Christian of the fence. There was a person who had been listening to some of my videos and had written me in personal messages asking me a lot of questions about Christianity and so on, because he had misgivings, and those were my answers to him. And so there's some more involved in that.
Well, I will definitely include links to your YouTube channel and your videos there on the summary page when we post this podcast. So I'm sure I would definitely recommend people check that out. I know there's more research I need to do on that myself. But, Larry, I really appreciate you taking the time to share all of this. I think if you're inside the family, it's maybe difficult to realize the impact that your perspective can have on people, but I wanted to do this so badly because I really do recognize as an outsider of the family, having lived that experience growing up in a worldwide church of God, how useful your perspective can be. And I just really appreciate you sharing all this, and I hope people will take advantage of the work that you've done and sharing everything you've learned. You've got quite a mind, I find quite an intellect. And I think people could benefit a lot from listening to your YouTube videos and your perspective on religion. I'm sure we could spend hours here talking more about, you know, the conclusions and realizations you've had. But thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thanks for having me. I was glad to talk with you.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll drive some more traffic to your YouTube site, and you'll probably get a lot of interesting comments.
I'm looking forward to it. The comment section is the best part.
That's right. All right, Larry. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Some voice has got to come in the spiritual wilderness of modern Babylon or confusion and call the people out of this Babylon to read the 18th chapter of the book of Revelation.
It's possible when you try to...
Oh, well, some people do. But then you just... Some people do. Put it that way. I'm not a hostile.